Hello, it is Monday, December 21st.
Hello.
It is the winter solstice. This is this is Solstice Cast. LA Solstice Cast. Hi guys. Hi Hayes, Alyssa, how are you?
I'm good.
That sounds like some kind of like classical music.
This is
podcast.
Yeah.
Solstice.
I mean, not Solstice Cast? Is it something else where we talk about automated drones delivering packages to and from hospital helipads? I'd rather talk about the solstice, honestly. No one ever asks me, though, what I think the news
should
be.
Let's try to do... It's the shortest day of the year, so let's try to do an episode that's as long as the sun is
up. Yeah, I like that.
Tomorrow.
I feel like there's like a druidic resonance to that, that I appreciate. It is LA Podcast. It is episode 153. We don't have an episode title yet. I'm thinking, have a holly moly Christmas, you know, because our in view of our malls being essential commerce places.
Yeah, and there's Holly Mitchell sort of you could throw
but
in there.
We're not talking about her in this episode. It's spelled like mall, much, like M-A-U-L.
We'll come up with a better title. Anyway, we do have a fair bit to go over for this, our second to last episode of the year.
Yeah.
We are rapidly winding down 2020, the year that many people thought would never end. Hayes famously thought that it would stop in November, but time has progressed. Whether we like it or not, it seems like it is just going to keep happening. Days will keep going. So what is happening in Los Angeles this week? We have more coronavirus updates for you, as Los Angeles is now the epicenter in the world, on the entire planet, for new COVID cases and hospitalizations. So over the course of the past week, the situation has grown increasingly dire. We did drop down to 0% ICU capacity this week, I think on two separate days. Is that correct?
We've sat at zero now for the past three or four days.
Okay. Yeah, and this again is our Southern California region, which is much larger than what people typically think of as being Southern California, stretching all the way up to the eastern border of the state with Nevada. 0% ICU capacity. We talked a lot about what that meant last week in terms of the lack of staffing available. Over the course of this past week, we had a number of new high marks in terms of positive cases being registered. 16,000 on Friday. That was preceded by a truly staggering 22,000 on Wednesday. A lot of that was because of a backlog in test results coming out of one specific lab, as happens from time to time. So we had this escalation continuing from last week, from 10,000 to 12,000 to 13,000, ending the week with 16,000, which is the new highest number, excluding those backlogged cases. Hospitalizations have continued to go up. They are now at 5,500 as of the time that we are recording this.
According to the state numbers, which will register tomorrow, we're at a little over 5,700 now.
Right.
And the increase has slowed a little bit. We had 324 new hospitalizations in one day on Friday. That was a record.
Yep.
And it has since slowed back down to, in terms of net people hospitalized at any given time, it's going up by about 150, 160 a day now, which is one of the only, and also new cases have slowed down a little bit, going to like 13,000 new cases a day now instead of 16,000. So that's
over,
the only thing
over
resembling
the weekend, right?
For the weekend, but case counts tend to, it's more deaths that aren't counted as consistently over
the
weekend.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the only thing resembling good news, is that the massive increases in cases and people hospitalized are, it doesn't appear to be increasing exponentially just over the last 2 days, which, I mean, that is certainly good compared to what we were seeing earlier in the week.
Yep. So, I mean, we still have, I think a long ways to go before we are what might be considered out of the woods here. LA Times has done a lot of really good reporting over the past week about what it means for healthcare to need to be rationed. We are firmly in that territory now, being at 0% ICU capacity regionally and with very limited capacity locally. Now, hospitals are having to make very difficult decisions, as we've seen throughout this pandemic, but generally speaking, from a remove of thousands of miles here in Los Angeles, that there are difficult decisions that need to be made when you have to determine whether or not you're prioritizing somebody at risk of dying of COVID, somebody who is having potentially elective, although potentially still serious surgery. Those are now considerations that are fully in effect here in Los Angeles. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we are the most affected part of the most affected country in the entire world. COVID, this second wave of COVID has hit Los Angeles way harder than the first wave ever did. There was a really good map posted online that showed that Tennessee was the state that has been hardest hit in recent weeks. But the actual rate of infection, the population adjusted rate of infection in Los Angeles, even exceeds that. Sumia Karlamangla with the LA Times had posted on Twitter that the state of Tennessee, which is the hardest hit state in the entire country right now, has 134 new cases per 100,000 residents. In LA County, although the state of California is behind that rate in Tennessee, LA County is actually above that, just barely, with 135 new cases per 100,000 residents. And that's over the last week. So things have gotten really
bad here. LA cities is worse than LA counties overall in terms of case rates, certainly. I saw that the city of LA is averaging over the last week something about 20% or more positive tests coming in. The city is the epicenter within the county.
That is really wild. And it's strange because I feel like this is a moment where obviously the entire country, the United States, is not doing a good job at handling this pandemic, obviously. The worst in the world, in fact. And it is interesting, though, because at least for me, I don't know how you guys feel about this, as I've been looking at the news about the vaccine elsewhere, a lot of people are feeling this palpable sense of relief. I've felt pretty removed from that, honestly. It does feel like it will be, it's almost like, okay, yeah, that will be great when we get to that point. But the fact of the matter is we have at least, 6 or 8 weeks of this incredibly pronounced community spread here in Los Angeles. And that is something that no amount of vaccinations will really be able to do anything about.
It's wonderful for every medical worker who gets it to just have any degree of feeling of security for them is great. It's well-deserved. I mean, but that obviously won't have an impact on the trauma, the fatigue, like everything that they're dealing with now and that is going to get worse over the next few weeks. And it extends to other, I don't think anything is quite like working in a hospital right now, but you talked about Sumia Karlamangla and their other LA Times reporters, Brittany Mejia, like the kind of work that they've been doing, stories that like dig so deep into the tragedy of what's happening right now. I think that they've been doing extraordinary work at the LA Times on COVID. Gustavo Arellano wrote a column today about a woman, a cancer patient who did not receive care in Joshua Tree because the hospitals were too full with COVID patients and died. Like just the emotional wear and tear that's happening for so many people right now and is going to get worse. And the physical suffering that's happening. I know someone who's in the hospital right now with COVID and is not doing very well. I agree with you. The vaccine, it doesn't feel like here is going to make much of a difference in terms of just the effects of this disease. Like, it's just going to rage through here for the next at least month, given how high the new cases are. And there's sort of a fatalistic attitude to it. At the same time, it feels like there are opportunities every single day, and we pass on them. I wrote the last thing I wrote for the site, because it feels weird to write about anything else. But 2+ weeks ago, I was talking about now is probably a good time to shut down retail.
Yeah.
Just to signal to people that this is really, really serious, and just to avoid as much as you can. If you can't regulate people going to each other's homes, you just do what you can do. Malls are easy to close. You can regulate, you can enforce a mall closure. They can't sneakily keep a mall open.
But apparently they can, because everybody posted the viral footage of the Citadel. I haven't seen any of the same stuff of the Grove. Have you? Have you seen any aerial footage of the Grove like that? It looks it's very deceiving when you look at Instagram, because everyone takes off their mask to pose. So you look through the geotag of Instagram, and it's just a bunch of people having a very normal time at the Grove. So it's hard to judge what it's like there. But the Citadel images were very troubling, because you could tell very easily, because the parking lot is completely packed and people are circling for park lane. So that shows you that if there are any restrictions at all on how many people are going there, they are far exceeding the number of parking spaces, which are... Yeah. The upper level of the number of people that would ever be parking there. And then a bunch of people were sharing that and talking about, the safety of retail workers. Some people even on Twitter were saying, I feel scared to go to work. Yeah. I'm working this job. I don't feel like I should be going there. And then I looked at the LA County data, and the Citadel has 4 citations in the last month, and you don't know what those are about exactly. It's not the same as some of the other ones. The little code violation is clear. This one, I don't really know what it was for, but there were 4 violations. Why are they not closed?
Yeah, what do those citations mean for them? We know that there have been more and more establishments, restaurants, and I believe retail, but specifically restaurants, that have been openly flouting the public health regulations, saying that we're not going to close, we're not going to do this or that. There's a restaurant in Agoura Hills, which has refused to close. There are multiple, apparently, in Venice, Los Angeles, that are not closing. And the retail situation is particularly dire, because now, we've created a situation in which retail workers feel like they have no, they don't feel like they have no alternative. They actually have no alternative. It's show up or be fired. And there's not a clear way that the workers can actually make sure that their employers are regarding their safety with any sort of minimal restraint that would be expected. I think that any of us or any worker would be well within their rights to expect. The county has not done enough, or even close to enough, to protect workers during this holiday season. We could and should have seen exactly what's happening at the Citadel and Commerce, exactly what's happening, I have no doubt, at other malls.
The Glendale Galleria is packed. I saw footage of
yesterday.
Yeah,
that's an indoor mall, too.
That's straight up indoor, yep.
Yeah, so Hayes, to go back to what you were saying about one month out from now feels like it is baked in as this period of incredible suffering. The next several weeks are going to be very bad here. One of the reasons why we can say that with a relative degree of certainty is because throughout the pandemic, although the percentage of people who are dying of COVID has decreased as we learn more about the virus and treatment options improve, also as some of the population that is actually getting the disease are more naturally hardy and more resistant to it, regardless of that, I think it's been relatively steady that about like 12 to 15% of the people who are getting this disease end up needing to be hospitalized. And 12% of those people end up needing to be, at some point during their stay in the hospital, put in intensive care units. So with the numbers that we were talking about at the outset of this program, that there are in one day that you might have nearing 20,000 people testing positive for COVID, there are days coming where we will have such an overwhelming number of people needing to be hospitalized that we will not be able to handle it. We just don't have the capacity to handle it. We're at 0% capacity right now. Mm-hmm. And it's very frightening as we look forward, not just to the end of this week with the Christmas holiday approaching, but to the weeks that follow that. We know that people, against the advice of public health officials, are going to be going and meeting family, doing whatever, doing the Farhad Manju thing where you're just like...
Boy, that column with each passing day, I tell you, like with what actually we're still living through the ramifications of what happened on Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
like that was, it's not entirely the driver of the current surge, but it's a huge, huge part of it. The numbers just show it. People got together on Thanksgiving, and now thousands of people are going to die because of it.
And you know what's really fucked is that like the response to that, at which Manju posted on Twitter also, was essentially like, so is somebody else saying, don't shame people because it doesn't work. But also like the attached notion to that was, look, you know, they did this and it's fine. Everything is fine for them. And right. Like, yeah, their family isn't sick and whatever. So just do whatever you want and somebody's going to die. But maybe it's not somebody that you know personally.
Yeah, I mean, shame, I think, works pretty well in a lot of cases. But even if it doesn't work in this case, it seems preferable to writing a column saying that you are going to do this.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen. We're going to have people... They're just going to change the standard of care for COVID. The staffing just will not be there for it. We're going to see a lot more deaths. We're going to, whether it's images or stories, or just, they're going to be people dying in hallways and parking garages. And we're just in for a lot of tragedy over the next few weeks. And it's impossible to say that, like, to really be optimistic about this period in the pandemic in LA right now.
I think what will also happen too is Apple shut down their stores, you know, by themselves. And they said, we're not going to take that risk.
In the Beverly Center?
Workers. I don't know which store it was. Yeah, but they shut down all their California stores. And I think we'll start to see some retailers who, I don't know what kind of benefits Apple has for its workers, but that might be able to, you know, look at that risk and say, you know, we're not willing to take it. But I think we'll also start to see like the shutdown of major grocery chains, because we have now, there was a story this morning in the LA Times about how many grocery stores and department stores and like places like Costco have like 50 workers who are sick. And you can't run a store at a certain point if you don't have anybody trained to come work in your store. So I think we'll start to have... not just a shutdown of, it'll be like an involuntary shutdown. We'll start to lose like this infrastructure of essential workers that we have relied on and not taken care of this whole time.
I hope that that's the case. I sort of doubt it. You look at Apple, this is, I don't know if they still are, but for a number of years, they were the single most profitable company in the world. And they can afford to do things and make decisions like this that I think a lot of other companies will not do of their own volition. And
their market cap is $2 trillion.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's that's where it becomes incumbent upon government to step in. And we haven't seen that. We've seen quite actually the opposite. We've seen, obviously, the exceptions made in the Safer at Home orders. We've seen a lot of buck passing on several levels of government, and people are going to die. That is a foregone conclusion at this point. People who would not otherwise have died if they were able to get the standard of care that they were getting 2 months ago are going to die in the next month.
Mm-hmm. UFCW, the local in LA, the food and commercial workers, that the grocery store workers are calling for a month-long shutdown, which is not nothing. That's really significant. Speaking of staying home, we got some clarity this week on the next couple years for Mayor Eric Garcetti. Alyssa, do you want to walk us through what we learned about what Eric Garcetti is going to be up to next?
Sure. So I think you called it on last week's show, right, Hayes?
After saying, yes, I did call it on last week's show after saying the exact opposite thing the week before. But it's all the recent... Most recent calls, the only one that matters.
Yeah, I won't go back to that show, but I do remember that you said that it was going to be Mayor Pete because that was like the most offensive,
the cruelest possible choice.
And we did get, so Pete Buttigieg is going to be our Secretary of Transportation, God willing, that he gets approved by the Senate. And it was an interesting. You know, it was a clear kind of front runner situation. It was very, you know, the prediction markets all kind of leapt behind him once it was sure that Rahm was out. And then there was like no more talk about Garcetti at all. And I guess like the Rahm story was that like Joe Biden had to call him and be like, listen, Rahm, there's just not a place for you anymore. Like, you're out of here, which is a good sign, I guess. I was heartened by that.
That's what constitutes good news.
Yeah. In the range of news.
The most vile people in American politics are not going to be at a...
So that was on Tuesday. I think the news leaks that it's Buttigieg. Later in the day, you know, he confirms that this is true. And then at the same time, we get this news that this domestic climate coordinator position, which is the other job that Garcetti had been supposedly considered for, is going to be filled by Gina McCarthy, who is the former EPA chief. So by the next day, that news is confirmed as well. So those are basically the last two positions really in the cabinet, or not. I don't think the climate coordinator is actually a cabinet position. And that's really the last two that people had been talking about. At the same time, we still have the Black Lives Matter protests have been happening for 4 weeks. So that morning on Wednesday, they have declared victory and they do one last protest out in front of Getty House saying that we've blocked Garcetti. And then the following day, we have this very interesting Garcetti COVID show that does not take place at City Hall as they have been taking place, but it actually is being shot inside of Getty House, basically in his living room. And we have this announcement that not only is he not going to Washington, but that he actually is at home because his daughter is sick.
Yeah, the show began with him explaining why he was doing the show from home, which his daughter, Maya, who's 9 years old, had been diagnosed with COVID. She did have symptoms, but at the time he did the COVID show, she was doing better. I haven't heard anything since. I assume she's doing fine now, which is great. He said that he had no idea how she could have gotten it because they don't mix any kind of like family environment. She's not doing any kind of like school situation right now. So, but that suggests to me that it was likely one of the, I think, many people that work in his house,
right,
in different ways.
And they were both him and Amy Wakelin, Garcetti and Amy Wakelin, both tested negative.
That's
right,
what he said. Yes. Yeah, that she was only
and they were isolating.
Positive, although nobody did ask that. Nobody asked specifically about a school. He did say they take all precautions, right? Did they say that they don't go to
school?
Yeah,
but he said that we weren't mixing with other families. So I assumed that meant that she wasn't in a school thing.
I thought the same thing. I assumed it was probably someone who worked in the household, and I was hoping somebody would have asked if everyone in the house had been tested. Maybe we'll find out that information, because I think that's a valid concern, and also that you're
sure
that you wouldn't have it and your kid would. I mean, we've sent our, you know, we go to a preschool and there has been cases at that preschool, and I do know that sometimes it takes a while. The kid gets it first and then the adults get it
right
later, obviously. So it's horrible. It's very
yeah,
troubling,
it's really
scary. Especially when there's been an uptick of the MIS-C disease that kids have been getting after they have COVID. It's very, there's one child that has died from MIS-C mm-hmm. in LA. So it's very, very scary. And I hope that I hope that no one else is affected in the house. But it was a very shocking and I think like a very emotional moment to see this happening on literally, I think, the worst day of the crisis. That was the day that we had
yep.
all the record-breaking hospitalizations and case numbers coming out. And really just underlying the importance of staying home. And then tacked onto it was this announcement that he himself would be staying here. It was kind of unclear at first, like what the exact circumstances under which he was staying here were. And it was multiple reporters asked during the follow-up.
I think it's pretty clear.
Well, let's talk about like the timeline of this, because Buttigieg was announced as Secretary of Transportation early in the week, Monday, Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Here's what Garcetti said when he first announced that he was not going to the White House. He said, "There's been speculation that I would leave Los Angeles to join a Biden-Harris administration." And then he talked about how the Biden is a friend to Los Angeles and he's got a big job ahead of him, but he's going to do great, all this stuff. Then Garcetti said, "In this moment, as so many lives are on the line, there's nothing more important to me, no task more urgent than being here as LA faces the greatest crisis in its history. As the administration reached out to me about serving, I let them know early this week that my city needs me now, that I want to be here and I need to be here." So it does, like the timing he gives early this week does line up very closely with when the jobs that he was up for were offered. But Scott and I talked about this when we went live on Instagram on Thursday. It is weird that you would not tell your friend that you didn't want this job until a month and a half after he won the election. And like while you were being considered the entire time, and to sort of act like, oh, all along, I was never going to do this.
Right.
It's like, why didn't you say so to Joe Biden, to the city of Los Angeles, at the very beginning of this process, if that is true?
Sources within the Biden campaign declined to comment.
But then there was a very specific wording when Claudia Peschuta asked again.
Claudia Peschuta the LA podcast text group mostly is talking about Claudia Peschuta and what great questions she asks at the COVID
it's
shows.
It's true.
She is the voice of you, the viewer at home. You can just sit. Don't worry. While Garcetti is giving his initial presentation, don't worry. Claudia will ask the exact thing that you are screaming at your computer screen.
Claudia is the audience stand-in.
Yes, yes. And this time she asked, based on that phrasing, it's kind of confusing. Did they offered you a job and you turned it down? And he said, basically, yes, there were things on the table.
Uh-huh.
And that he, I don't know if he used the word decline, but he let them know that he wasn't going to.
There were literally things on the table in the room where he was not getting offered this position.
I mean, I don't know. I went back and forth and I listened to it again, despite my, you know, I thought I heard it the first time. And so I went back and listened again.
Yeah.
And I believe that they probably did have that conversation, but you also have to look at what else happened this week. We had the Rick Jacobs case. He is going to be called to testify. That was the same
yes.
day, right? That was
Garcetti. Garcetti is going to be deposed
yes.
in the case of Rick Jacobs, his senior advisor, who is accused of being a serial sexual misconduct committer.
And the Black Lives Matter protests were national news. I mean, I can't tell you like how many stories that I saw just over the last week about these ongoing protests and from you know, major outlets across the country. So you really do have to wonder if there was the same kind of ROM type of conversation that happened that hasn't maybe been leaked yet. Sure. And if the inauguration was kind of the inauguration chair was the deal that
I think that was the
struck.
Case.
Or like a wait a couple years conversation. Like
I don't
finish
think
your
this
term.
Was a wait a couple of years conversation. It's you guys are much more credible of this sequence of events than I am.
I think it absolutely could have been. The timing could not be worse for Garcetti right now. With the not that you know maybe in 2 years it won't be better, but in with the Rick Jacobs stuff with the like he could not leave the this office right now at the absolute peak of the pandemic. I just don't think there's any way that you could get away with doing something like that. And so and also they didn't want him to do it because of the Rick Jacobs stuff and like the timing is really, really bad.
If you're but, Garcetti and you have been planning on leaving this office, I'm sorry, if people have been speculating that you want to leave your office.
Yeah, not even people, just there has been speculation.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It just has actually just been floating around. It's airborne.
It's airborne. It's in the air much like the ozone that has increasingly dominated the LA atmosphere over the course of Garcetti's second term. There has been speculation over the course of the past 3 years that Eric Garcetti could not literally wait another day to get out of this city only has increased over the course of this current year in which people have really been letting him know that they're not exceptionally fond of his leadership style. I do not believe that you wait all of that time only to decide, okay, the pandemic is really bad right now. I'm not taking this job. I just don't see him doing that. And I don't think that he was offered this job. I think if anything, the thing that seems likeliest to me is that after the election, there was sort of a internal Biden campaign, let's wait and see how things progresses. And then they kind of came to the realization that things were not getting better on the home front for Eric Garcetti and that they just needed to move on and pick somebody who was going to be less of a distraction, frankly.
Yeah. Here's what I think is the best case scenario. Something I think could honestly be true. I think it is possible that they offered him something truly insulting. The way they offered Keisha Lance Bottoms in the mayor of Atlanta, they apparently offered the ambassadorship to the Bahamas. And she was like, no, I'm not interested in that. I think it's possible that they went to Garcetti with maybe even that same job or something like
Mexico.
That.
Mexico. Everybody was talking about Mexico, remember?
Yeah, they mentioned Mexico, but like, he might have taken that. I think it could have been something even, like, something really dumb. And I think that would make it technically true that there were things on the table that he rejected. And also, it would make sense, like, why he waited all this time before making the announcement that he found out that that was all he was going to get. What's definitely a lie and just makes it, I mean, it feels so gaslighty to frame it this way, was, like, the idea that he always was 100% committed to being mayor here. Like, same for when he was about to run for president. It's just so transparent.
The parallels are
pretty
clear.
Had things broken differently, he would have fucking booked. He was very eager to do so. And you just can't, you lose the city. That's what has happened. He lost the city by doing exactly this thing. Like
dragging
signaling to everyone in the country how much he wanted to leave. Yeah. And then when that opportunity disappears, saying, like coming back and talking about how much he loves LA.
He doesn't care what people hear. Think because that has always been my understanding. He does not care what people here think because he is so out the door. This is now problematic for him because it does appear that Amtrak Joe has put he's basically done the Irishman to Garcetti's political career at this point. He's just taken him into an empty room and shot him. I don't really see how your national ambitions recover from this.
Come back in 2 years, like I think he will get something.
So here's my thought. Like now he has nothing to lose, Garcetti. Mm-hmm. He should meet with Black Lives Matter on Monday. Like, yeah. He should just try to build these bridges in the time that he has left, because who does he have to answer to, and what type of
lame duck session does he want to have?
Yes. Like, what's the legacy? Yes. What is the legacy that you want it to be? You got 2 years. You could do a lot.
Yeah. I have another idea for what he could do. Yeah. The day after he lost this opportunity, what about a PowerPoint about drones?
It's funny that you say that, because I had actually forgotten what it was like to have Eric Garcetti in town and leading rather than leaving, as he put it. And this was a good reminder that it sucks. It sucks. Alyssa, when you
what
see
happened?
It.
This was on Wednesday,
this
right?
Was on Wednesday.
So right after Pete Buttigieg got Secretary of Transportation. What was
right?
Eric
so
Garcetti
yeah,
up
that,
to?
It was after. So the I'm watching like the live feed of Mayor Pete and Amtrak Joe starting their whistle stop tour of the country, and then you switch channels and you watch this webinar for the National League of Cities, which is the same place I remembered that I saw Mayor Garcetti interview Elon Musk in front of a room of like thousands of transportation professionals, who he told to like never build trains again. Elon Musk did. A question asked by the mayor. And gives this presentation where he did reference Secretary Buttigieg. He did say like, can't yeah. wait to get that help from him. So it was acknowledged. But yeah, this that keeps coming up, I think we every once in a while this air taxi plan gets floated, and the real impetus behind it is that companies like Uber, and in this case Hyundai, which is one of the companies they're partnering with, mm-hmm. have these plans to bring air mobility to cities, and everybody wants to be in LA because it's big, and also because we have helipads on the top of every single building due to the fire codes from 1970s. And this, it always just comes up, and then we have to like talk about it for a few minutes, because the argument is, if we don't plan for this, it's just coming anyway. And that's also the same thing that was said about autonomous vehicles for a decade.
It's true.
Where are they?
See them here yet? Like, we could
didn't
stop
Uber just
them,
sell
and we
its,
did.
All its
they
interest
did.
In
they did
vehicles?
Sell there.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
What makes you think they might not sell this sector as well? But it was just a very funny thing to watch Twitter grab hold of this, and the tweets all being like, "Well, Pete doesn't sound so bad after all."
Yeah, it was.
I think it's worth like. I'm not even going to weigh in too much about like whether this is an issue worth talking about, and like if you need to anticipate regulating this before these other industries get in there. I do believe that the day that the most cases and hospitalizations are announced in the worst, what's like approximating a mass extinction event in your city, is not the day to be doing this presentation. You cancel. You just do it another. Like, I don't care. You focus only on this all the time. It's like there is a volcano exploding out of uh-huh. the La Brea tar pits every single day.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't, if that were happening, you would not do a PowerPoint in the National League of Cities about drones.
Look, well, guess what?
So
they talk about
my question
hospitals,
is
obviously.
If they wait, if they wait 3 weeks until January whatever, then is there not a possibility that Hyundai says too late? We've already got our full fleet of flying taxis live in the city of Los Angeles. You didn't act fast enough.
Yeah, I don't. I. It's just the same. It's the same problem over and over. We have this brand new like think tank that was launched, the Urban Movement Labs,
Urban Mobility Labs.
Something. No, movement. I think it's movement. But and like they test all these new transportation ideas or try to bring them here. So we have that, but we don't have one of those for like sidewalk repair, which the places I have asked my sidewalk to be fixed years ago are still not fixed. So I'm glad they could get delivery robots driving around, you know, certain neighborhoods. But then if you look at these videos, a friend of the show, Mehmet Berker, posted a video where the delivery robot couldn't like get past the sidewalk part of the sidewalk, and then it didn't have enough time to cross the street with the
not only are they not going to pave your road, Alyssa, now there are going to be flying Hyundais crashing into the into the asphalt. So good luck to you. We did find out that Urban Movement Labs shares an address with Josh Kushner.
Kushner.
Yes, yes, correct. Josh Kushner. Yes. Not Jared Kushner, Josh Kushner.
Yes.
The diet version of a Kushner who is a Democrat.
He's married to Carly Kloss. Yes, I was in the same class as him and Nick Melvoin, school board member in college. Yes, I am the only one of the three of us that has multiple podcasts. There's no shame for them. That's
and speaking
okay.
of Kushners, one other big, I think, win for the week that was very interesting was we talked about the Crenshaw Mall and that plan that we talked about. They pulled out, LiveWork pulled out of the plan for the Crenshaw Mall.
Yes. Who's next meme? Right?
Who wants next?
Yes. They just keep showing up and then the heads roll down the street.
I just think this is a window for Garcetti to be like, have a show on Monday and be like, you know, come back to the daily format of the show, be with us, get us through this, and then really just like go for broke. Just
there's plenty to talk about. We could do this show every day.
You guys don't, you have a different perception than mine, which is that He can't stand. The thought is definitely contingent on the thought that he would do any of these things, that he would meet Black Lives Matter, that he would do any of that is contingent on the reality of those groups not being directly related to him, not getting the promotion that he's been literally begging for. And I just believe that that is a substantial part of the reason why he's stuck in the city that he so clearly despises and can't wait to get out of. And I don't think that he will ever meet with anybody in a real way because of that.
I think it also, it doesn't help that his big signature police reform effort, cutting $150 million from the LAPD budget, reallocating it to other uses in the city, has now been done. The money has been allocated in a way that did not really make any news.
Right.
It was just chopped up. It wasn't the full $150 million. Some of it is being held back. Some of it is being used to plug leaks in the budget. The rest was chopped up between council districts according to need. Mm-hmm. Most of it going to Curran Price's 9th district. He got something like $22 million. Mike Bonin's district, being the wealthiest, got $2,700 of this money. Don't spend it all in one place.
Don't spend it all in one urban mobility hub.
It's like the crazy thing is that we've done, you know, what we've done is we've given the LA Police Protective League the ammo that they need to go to right-wing media flax and say LA defunded the police and look, crime is rampant. And the only thing that we got out of it is more slush fund money for city council members for them to just move around however they see fit with that. That was the outcome.
Then there was a range of uses of it, some being more applicable to crime reduction and improving low-income communities of color.
Sure.
But I think the worst impact is it would have just made more sense to take the whole, whatever it was, whether it was $150 million, $90 million, or whatever, say this is all going to this one program that is putting people to work, that's educate, that's like giving like kids like something in these communities. Just like that would have, I think, made a much bigger impact than what happened, which is nothing.
Which is going to be very, very minimal in terms of impact. I want to go back to that moment over the summer. We had the People's Budget Coalition presenting to City Council. I don't even know if Curran Price stayed awake through that meeting. Like, what I really want to get at is like, so you have Malina Abdullah, the professor, the leader of this Black Lives Matter movement locally. You have Baba Akili, you have Kendrick Sampson, you have all these people coming out and speaking to city council about the potential good that can be done by reallocating money that currently exists not for public services into low-income, specifically Black communities. Do you think those three people were sitting up there saying, like, things would be materially better if you just gave Curran Price a big-ass check that says $22 million on it? Curran Price is the person that we're going to give all this money to, and just whatever he discretionarily decides to do with it is going to benefit people that live in this city? No. It's insane. It makes no sense whatsoever.
It's gone. It happened.
It's gone. It's done.
Let's get in. Let's stay with the city council, and let's do some, like, gossip. Let's do, like, drama. We haven't really done enough of this lately. Let's dish. So this is something to watch for over the next few weeks. The council's on a hiatus, and there are three new members. Kevin DeLeon has been there for a couple months now, but you had Mark Ridley Thomas and Nithya Raman in their first meeting this week. So this is a new council. It's intact. They had their first meeting on Tuesday where like this is the group. But the thing that has yet to happen is they have not been assigned to their committees. The committees in the city council are really important. They're smaller. It works just like Congress does. They're like smaller collections of council members that each committee has a specific purview. You could call them itty bitty city committees. Ellis is just cringing so hard. These committees, there's 20 of them, and it works the same way where a motion is put forward in city council. And when it gets seconded, it often gets sent to the relevant committee, and then it has to get out of that committee to be sent back to the full council. And things can be stashed in committee for a really long time. If the chair of that committee doesn't want to bring it up for a vote, you'll just never see it again. So they have outsized power, the chair of these committees, over whatever their area is. And you often hear, you know, the council until the last year or so always voted 15-0. But you would often hear that committees is where it really goes down. That's where the work gets done. I mean, you know, it's relative. I wouldn't say it really goes down in committees, but compared to the full council, I think that is mostly true. Every council member gets the opportunity to chair at least one committee. That's the rule. And some of the committees are ad hoc committees, which means that they're formed just temporarily in response to existing issues. The ad hocs right now are COVID recovery, police reform, the Olympics, which has 7 people. They're mostly 3 to 5 people on these committees. The Olympics committee has 7 people. And the job creation plan. There are also a bunch of whammies for committees that don't meet very often, don't have a bunch of power. And if you are made chair of them, that means that you are not the favorite of the council president, who makes all Nuri Martinez, president of the city council, has total discretion over these committee assignments. It's a total black box. It's like there's conversation. She talks to all the other council members about it and finds out what their preferences are and things like that.
Right.
But it's entirely her decision who gets these committees.
It's like if the city council were a legislative body like the state assembly or like the House of Representatives instead of a municipal body with only 15
yeah,
people on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's only 15 of them. So, yeah, the whammies include there's an information technology and general services committee. That one is sort of like not considered to be a prime seat. There's personnel and animal welfare. That's Paul Koretz's chair, and he truly, truly, truly loves animals. So I think that is actually a good spot for him. There's a rules and elections committee, and some of them just like don't meet very often but have a massive portfolio. There's health, education, neighborhoods, parks, arts, and river. That's one committee, the chairmanship of which is open because David Rue was chair of that committee.
Health and river are in the same committee.
Health, education, neighborhoods. All neighborhoods. That's like the neighborhood council system is included in that. Parks, arts, and river. That's one committee. And there are also a handful of like the primo committees, like the ones that there's a lot of competition for who gets these seats.
Mm-hmm.
And those from what, in my opinion, the big ones right now are budget. Budget's always huge. Planning and land use management, that's known as the Plum Committee, always huge. And right now, I think homelessness and poverty is another really prime one, as a lot of decision-making is being made at the city level over how to deal with homelessness. There's also energy, climate change, and environmental justice. That's one committee. Public safety committee and immigrant affairs, civil rights, and equity are also relevant ones going forward, as well as the COVID and police reform ad hocs. So let's talk about Nuri Martinez, who's making all these decisions. She was unanimously reelected as council president. There were whispers that maybe one council member or another was going to make a run at trying to whip up votes for that position. No one got it together. And so she remains council president. And she made a speech. And the speech was wild.
Yeah, it was.
It was, you know, she talked about like everything that the council has mobilized to do. And I also, I mean, like, I don't want to totally downplay what the council and the city, it's not nothing that they have accomplished. They've gotten $100 million together for rent relief. That is the largest rent fund in the country. They did manage some degree of eviction protections, rent freeze, things like that. Like, it's certainly not nothing. It took them a while to figure out how to meet when the pandemic started, but they eventually did figure out how to do that.
Still not meeting but on Fridays.
There's still
only meeting twice a week, even though it seems like it would be.
Zoom works on Fridays.
That's a good point. I'm not sure.
Right?
I've never tried.
Most of her speech was pretty openly attacking progressive activists and people that have criticized her from the left. And she talked about the language that has been used against her, which you can hear in every meeting. It's true. It's a legitimate issue. I'm sure for her is terrible to have to undergo every single time you have a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, outside her house, there have been protests at her house when people are using those kind of terms as well. But she talked about not listening to those forces and pay attention to the people that have actually been doing the work. Not the voices of, she talked about social media rebels who have been speaking out against her. This is a real, really legitimate area of focus for her as she embarks on her next year as council president, is kind of shutting out these voices. I do not think that this is the most productive way to do that. I think it actually will probably make it worse to address the people like who have been attacking her in that way, to make it a much more adversarial relationship. I don't think that will likely be super productive.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of fraught dynamics with her appointments that I think this could possibly be last 10 minutes of the Godfather moment for Nuri Martinez as she makes these appointments. The council has been really fractured over the whole pandemic. And there have been people speaking out kind of against her leadership in different ways, from things related to police reform to the ban on outdoor dining, which they voted on. Like, there have been a lot of broken votes. And there's this progressive wing forming. There's a pro-police wing. There are all these little factions that she could reward or punish with these committee assignments. And I think the ones to pay attention to, first of all, is what the three new members get. Because they're gunning for a lot of the same spots. Nithya Raman, she had her first council meeting this week. She put forward two motions targeted at homelessness, one about transforming how outreach is done in LA to make it more proactive, less complaint-based. Also one about citing a navigation center in her district. But Mark Ridley Thomas, new council member sworn in on the same day, did the same thing. Put forward two homelessness motions. Kevin DeLeon put forward homelessness motions on his first day. There's only one open seat on homelessness and poverty. It's chaired by Mitch O'Farrell right now. Would be interesting to see if he keeps that chair position as he
doesn't
goes
into...
Doesn't
that just tell you a lot about the city's handling of the homelessness
crisis? It does. And it will also tell a lot, I think, to see if he stays there. But the Marquise Harris Dawson, Mike Bonin are also on that committee. And what reshuffling takes place there, I think, will be indicative of who Nuri Martinez is potentially favoring at any given moment. There's also budget. Budget is a powerful committee. It's very relevant right now as we have conversations of this enormous budget deficit. This is Paul Krikorian's corner of power in city council. He's the budget guy in the city council, and he's the chair of this committee. And there are no open seats. It's the same. Krikorian, Price, Koretz, Blumenfield, and Bonin. And so if that lineup changed at all, that would tell you a lot about whether someone wanted to get off that committee or if Nuri Martinez decided to take them off for some reason. Public safety. This is a really interesting one. Monica Rodriguez is the chair of the public safety committee. Monica Rodriguez is being targeted by the Police Protective League for the 22 election. There was an article this week about how they're putting together a $10 million war chest to go after five targets over the next 2 years. Monica Rodriguez, Marquise Harris Dawson, Curran Price, Mike Bonin, and Nuri Martinez herself for their efforts to defund the police. They're going to try and attack those council members as much as possible. But Rodriguez and Price and Bonin are the only ones who are actually up for re-election. So if Monica Rodriguez is taken out of this seat and replaced with someone like Joe Buscaino or John Lee, who are the really pro-police members of the city council, that would be a gesture. That would be an olive branch to the PPL from Nuri Martinez. That's how that should be interpreted if that happens. There's also, I read this in this article. It's like pretty, the way they're building this $10 million war chest is having each of their members donate $22 out of every paycheck.
Out of the raises that they refuse to give back.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Out of the raises exactly they refuse to postpone.
The raises that they refuse to negotiate to postpone.
Yes. Thank you. $22 of that.
Yes. Also, the Ad Hoc Police Reform Committee needs a new chair. It was Herb Wesson. And whoever gets that chair position will tell you a lot about how Nuri Martinez, at least, is looking at the police reform efforts in the city. Finally, I want to talk about PLUM, which is the committee that you use to increase your personal liquidity as a council member historically over the years, and also the one that is you're probably about a coin flip to end up in prison if you are on this committee over the last few years.
Do you like Vegas? You might enjoy being the head of the PLUM committee.
This is planning and land use. You have enormous power over every land use decision in the city of Los Angeles, especially when you are chair, which Jose Huizar was at the time where he was taking hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes from developers. Mitch Englander was also on the PLUM committee and also used it to enrich himself. Two people who are currently on the PLUM committee are experiencing varying degrees of investigation by the FBI. Curran Price, we saw him in a warrant that the FBI was searching Ray Chan's Gmail account for his name. And also John Lee, famously known as City Staffer B when he was working for Mitch Englander and was roped into that investigation. They're both on PLUM. Is Nuri Martinez going to keep them both on PLUM, but which will show kind of how seriously she takes these investigations. Mm-hmm. And when those with two seats open on PLUM, there's going to be a big rush for those seats as well. So that's the landscape. It's like if the class president at high school got to choose like who sat at which cafeteria table. It's like deciding who has like social power in the city. And this was Herb Wesson usually did this right after the first council meeting with the complete council. Mm-hmm. But Nuri is taking her time. She often does with things like this. And so it could come next week. It could come when the council meets again in January. But it's just something to keep an eye on. It'll just tell a lot about sort of what we're in for over the next 2 years. Especially now that there's going to be no interim mayor appointed, no acting mayor. It'll have a lot of political implications.
It's amazing. All of that just evaporates.
Gone.
Yep.
Just gone.
Gone. Love it.
But I don't know how much different. Like, I always thought that they would appoint somebody. They would just come to an agreement and say, like, whoever is going to be mayor for the next 2 years has to promise not to run for mayor in 22, like they did in San Francisco.
Now that it's not happening, nobody can disprove my theory that it would have just been Greg Smith again, like they did.
Always just sitting in the audience.
As long as he's alive, just keep LA's last Republican mayor, Greg Smith.
So that's it. That's all I have on the. There are other dynamics, but that's a fascinating thing that we never talk about. And I think that's it for this week. That's all we have time for. One announcement. We have tomorrow night. We announced it on our Patreon to Sepulveda pass holders. Tonight, Monday night, tonight, there is the LA Podcast Holiday Party. We are doing a Zoom event for any Sepulveda pass holders and friends of the show who want to attend. You can check that out on patreon.com/LA Podcast. There are going to be a lot of special guests. That element is very exciting. But I think the main attraction to me is the dramatic readings that we're going to be doing of some previously unreleased content that I'm not even going to share here. But would you two agree that like that's the star of the show is this content?
I would say if you have not already signed up to become a Patreon of this show, you will get your money's worth
all at once. This is and here I'm really saying too much. This content is the tea. This is the tea. That's all I'm going to say. So sign up for our Patreon, come to this party, and unsubscribe the next day to do whatever you have to do. And you'll see the RSVP link on our Patreon when you respond, and we'll send the Zoom link and all that stuff. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you, Brian Holmes, for producing it. We will be back next week with our end-of-year episode with all our predictions for what is going to happen in 2021, which have never been wrong. Bye.